It's next to the shortest verse in the New Testament. The shortest one is Jesus wept. This is the second shortest verse. And it's a woman that we ought to remember. If you have your Bible turned there now, you know who it is. Luke 17:32. Jesus says, remember, Lot's wife. Lot's wife. We do not know the name of her unless we want to call her Mrs. Lot. But otherwise, we have not been given her first name. And there is really nothing good said about her. You could understand Jesus telling us to remember probably Ruth, or remember Naomi, or remember Hannah from the Old Testament. But why are we asked to remember Lot's wife? Now, his discourse is in the middle of talking about the tribulation period prior to his second coming and the kind of condition the world is in. And in the middle of that discourse, he says, remember Lot's wife. Now, if we were not told by him to remember her, chances are we wouldn't, because there's nothing about her that we consider worth remembering. So I'm going to give you what there is about her. Genesis chapter 19, verse 12. The angels have come to visit Lot, and you remember the purpose is to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, but Lot lives in Sodom. Because of its great wickedness, the time had come for God to judge it. In the Bible, it seems that a city is like a cup, or a nation is like a cup, and it sins, the people sin, and the cup begins to fill. And when the cup becomes totally full, then at that point in history, God destroys that nation or that people. And so when you have the flood, the world became filled with evil. And God would then judge the various tribes, the Canaanites and so forth, that the Israelites would go in their line to conquer. And he said, you don't go there yet because their sin is not yet full. And so I guess America's cup is slowly filling up. Hopefully we can empty it back down with people getting saved and living for God and righteousness. But anyway, the cup of Sodom had now been completely filled, and it's time for its destruction. And so that brings us down now to the angels visiting Lot, verse 12. And the men, that is, the two angels, said to Lot, is there anyone here besides you that is to be warned about the destruction of this city? Are there any son-in-laws, or do you have any sons? They didn't know a whole lot about him, did they? Do you have any daughters? Is there anybody living in a city that needs to be brought out of this place? For we're going to destroy this place because the cry of them is waxing great before the face of the Lord. That is the cry of evil. And the Lord has sent us to destroy it. Now, if you will, verse 15. And when the morning arose, the angels hastened Lot, saying, arise, take your wife. Now, here she's mentioned. Take your wife and your two daughters, which are living here at the house with you, lest you be destroyed when this city is destroyed. And while he lingered, that is, Lot was not too eager to leave, the men, the angels, grabbed hold of his hand and the hand of his wife, we are told again about her, and grabbed the two hands of the daughters. They had their hands full, so to speak. The Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought them forth. In other words, they pulled them out of the city. If you will, verse 24. And the Lord rained upon Sodom and Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain, all the inhabitants of the cities, that and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife, Lot's wife, looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Now, you must agree, we don't have a whole lot told us about this woman. Outside of she got married, she had some kids, she was reluctant to leave, and so was Lot. She left, and then after she left, she turned back, and she was turned to a pillar of salt. Now, from these few verses about Lot's wife, what is it Jesus says I'm supposed to remember? What is the lesson I'm supposed to learn? She must portray some kind of person who goes beyond annoying God, and who goes beyond displeasing God. For God to have done this to her, what did she do to him? And that's the question I think we have to try to deal with. Because his judgment of this woman ends up being just as great as his judgment placed upon the city of Sodom. All the people of Sodom were destroyed, And she was the only person outside the city of Sodom that was destroyed. Now, what had she done? What was her crime? What was her sin? I'm going to put it in real simple terms. It seems she changed her mind. That's it. She said, well, that's a woman's prerogative to change her mind. Well, not like Lot's wife. You don't want to change your mind in that direction. Most have heard of a person who has, they say, been born with a silver spoon in their mouth. That is, they have come by everything, inheritance, they have wealth, they have position, they have, well, in other words, everything is going their way because they were given to this by their parents. You might say that Adam and Eve were sort of born with a spoon in their mouth, silver spoon in their mouth. They had inherited from God His blessings and a paradise and His nearness and His calling of them to be His own, His, might say in a sense, His children. He had chosen them. He had produced them. He had drawn them. He had highly benefited them. You might say that they were made with a silver spoon. You couldn't get much better than what Adam and Eve had. Then came the fall. They lost the silver spoon. And as time transpires, we don't have a record of God even attempting to put a silver spoon back in the mouth of anybody He created. We have Adam and Eve, but they sinned, lost it, and then, you know, nobody after that, in a sense, gets the silver spoon. Until one day, God appears to a man called Abraham. Really, Abram is... name is later changed to Abraham. But it comes to a man named Abram. One man. I do not know how many people at this time populated the earth, but it would be a goodly number, and he just comes to one. And I kind of look at it this way. He informs Abraham, I am the only God. In a sense, the God creator. I've come down to choose you. I've come down to put a silver spoon in your mouth. I'm going to bless you like no other man has ever been blessed. I'm going to make of you a blessing. I'm going to benefit you. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to favor you if you'll just obey me and go where I lead you. And so from Adam, we go to Abraham, and the silver spoon just gets him transferred from one egg to the other egg. And so Abraham likes the offer. He likes the idea of the silver spoon. I don't mind it either. And so he takes his wife Sarah, and really against the Lord's instructions, he takes his nephew, his uncle's son. And you know who that is. It's Lot. Well, because of his association with the one God has called and God has favored and God has drawn, Abraham, I look at it this way, Lot gets a little silver spoon. He doesn't get the big spoon, but he gets a little silver spoon. And God also agrees because of his relationship to Abram to bless him. And they get so blessed both of them that they finally have to divide their herds. And Lot decides he wants to move off to another territory. And you know where Lot goes. He goes to Sodom. And undoubtedly there, he gets a wife. And because of his relationship to God, that is Lot, now we find that Lot's wife, in a sense, gets to share the little silver spoon that has been granted to Lot. Now, of all the people on the earth right now, as far as we know, only four people, Abraham and Sarah, Lot and Mrs. Lot, are the only ones that God has put into the privileged, select, called, unique group of people. Four of them. On the face of the earth. Now, Mrs. Lot really had a privileged relationship. But it was based on her relationship to Lot. It was based on his relationship to Abraham and Sarah. But she was among the four that were among God's blessed. Now, I want you to understand, people in the Bible, and I don't think a lot of people understand this, that God is real sensitive about how people respond to His attention. There are thousands and millions of people tonight that do not receive the attention of God. He has not drawn them. He has not spoken to them. He has not called them. He has not touched them. As far as they're concerned, He's gone. He's nowhere. He doesn't exist. They have no knowledge of Him. He has not come down and personally involved Himself in their life to the point that they know that they're dealing with Him. And yet He says, those that I have come down and personally drawn and then called, and then invited to become a part of my family. This is a tremendous privilege. The Creator God, and as we were flying over the airplane, we didn't fly over the airplane, we were flying in the airplane, over various cities coming back home, I mentioned to my wife, how on earth does God keep up with all these people? You look down there, and there are roads and houses going as far as the eye can see. And that's just between here and Florida. Thousands and thousands and thousands of homes and roads and people. How does God keep up with all these people? How many in that airplane of about 100 people have been privileged in their lifetime to be visited, drawn, called, touched, and invited to be a part of God's family? I don't know. Now, God, again, is real sensitive to how people treat this special invitation, this special privilege, which comes from the Creator of the universe. To think of the 5 billion people, God stooped down and spoke to you and said, I want to put a silver spoon in your mouth. Now, how you react to that offer definitely affects God. I want to say He's very sensitive and very touchy on your reaction to His invitation and offer. I don't think most people understand this. I know Lot's wife didn't. But again, I want to say to you, you and I have been highly privileged tonight. For He has come and drawn near to us as He did to Abraham and undoubtedly to Lot, to Sarah and Lot's wife. You and I are among the rare few tonight in the world that have been touched by God. The masses have not. He wants to touch them, but He picks His time, He picks His place and circumstances. So the knowledge of God was confined to 4 people at this time at which we're studying. For 30 years now, Lot has been married to Mrs. Lot. And they have fellowshipped with Sarah and Abraham. Lot has taught her what Abraham taught him about God and what he himself has learned. And so Lot's wife undoubtedly had responded favorably to God's drawing and to Lot's decision that this was the true God. So she had 30 years witnessed the goodness of God in their life. And Lot was a blessed man. He was very wealthy. God had done well by him, much better than Lot had done for God. So often that is the case. We don't hear about Lot doing a great deal in the city of Sodom to make anybody else righteous. We can assume he convinced his wife. We possibly can assume that he influenced his 2 girls that still lived at home. Remember when the angels came to destroy Sodom, they first visited Abraham, told him that they were going to Sodom to destroy it. Of course, Abraham, knowing that his nephew lived there and his wife, he said, I want the city spared. And so Abraham begins to pray. Well, God, if you can find so many righteous people living in Sodom, will you refrain from destroying the city? And God said, yeah, if I can find that many, I'll do that. And so Abraham begins to work the old number down, you know. It gets lower and lower and lower. And finally it gets down. He says, well, one more time, God, let me ask you this. If you can find 10 people in Sodom that are righteous, would you spare the whole city? He said, yeah. Now, let me tell you what I think the logic of Abraham was. I can't be sure of this. Lot and his wife made 2. He had 2 girls living at home. That makes 4. I believe he had 3 other girls who had gotten married. And that makes 6 more. Put all Lot's family together and you got 10. I think Abraham probably said, well, you know, I doubt if anybody else in Sodom is righteous. But I probably would be right in assuming that Lot has been able to influence his own family and his in-laws to be righteous. And so we can spare the city if we can just rely on what Lot has been able to do in influencing his own family. Abraham was wrong. Look, if you will, verse 14. And Lot went out. You remember the angel said, is anybody else living here that you think that needs to come out, that wants to be saved from the destruction of this city? Verse 14, so Lot hits the road. We're not told if he has some sons. We're not really sure. I'm just saying, I think there was 10 of them. And so Lot went out and he spoke unto his sons-in-laws, or sons-in-law, I don't know how many, which had married his daughters. We're not told how many daughters. I think he had 5 girls. And so he had 3 son-in-laws. And he said, in King James, up, or get up now, and get out of this city now. For the Lord, and they had heard of him talk of this Lord, for the Lord is going to destroy this city. But they would not listen to him. In a sense, they mocked him. And so I call him, I guess, a religious nut. And so he had no influence over his son-in-laws, and I guess his daughters either, because they did not decide to leave their husbands and join them. So when it came time to leave, there was only 4. And I think he left behind the other 6. Lot's wife had been privileged to see the angels. She had been privileged to hear the angel's warning. She had been privileged to see the angel's power as they blinded all those who tried to break into the house to molest the angels. She saw all of this. That would be enough to convince me that it's got to be something that what these angels were saying. Like Lot's wife, I think a lot of people today, again, don't realize the great honor and the great privilege it is to be selected and chosen and invited by God to join Him, be with Him to gain His blessings. No greater honor can heaven bestow than to put the silver spoon in a man's mouth. And that's what He does. The lost people don't understand this, but you get the silver spoon. You get the silver spoon. Now, as I mentioned, God is sensitive about how you deal with this invitation He gives you. It's not only the best offer of a lifetime, it's the best offer of eternal time. It's one that will put you in the silver position forever and ever and ever. I can only assume that Lot's wife had been agreeable to making Abraham's God and Lot's God her God. Since she was provided safety by the angels out of the city, I assume that they had permission to take her out and that she was agreeable to going. After traveling quite a distance, now the angels warned all of the four, don't look back. Now you wonder, what's the big deal? Just out of curiosity, I like to see the place go out and smoke. The angel said, don't look back. I guess the meaning was, and I'm not really sure what it is for as far as the angels go, that you don't have enough time between you and where you're going to sit here and watch what's going to happen in the city. I mean, I'm not going to let it burn until you get safe enough far away so you don't get burned. And so don't look back because that'll slow you down and we don't have a whole lot of time. This thing is on a time schedule and the bomb's about to go off and you have to get so many miles away before I blow it up. So I don't look back. Anyway, that was the instruction. And so they proceeded along this road and didn't look back. And they went quite a ways. Not really sure how much distance is covered here. Now, Genesis 19:23. Again, the sun had risen upon the earth when Lot finally reached Zoar. But anyway, when they finally got to Zoar, then the Lord rained upon Sodom and Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And He overthrew the cities and all the plains and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew up on the ground. And then verse 26. Finally, Lot's wife looks back from behind him. And when she did, she became a pillar of salt. Now, the only thing we're told about Lot's wife that she did, I guess we can remember, is that she looked back. And she became a monument when she did that to the danger of changing your mind. I'll say it again. She had been looking ahead this whole time. And now she turns around and looks back. And we have to ask, why? And I can only give you speculation here because the Bible does not say, and I can only try to figure out what was on the mind of this woman when she did this. I think she said, after going forward so far, looking at Zoar, which probably was much of nothing, and she had left the riches and everything else that was in Sodom, she decided that this is not what I want. God has not provided me with what I want. I want what I just left. And whatever God offers me in front of me, it's not as good as what I'm leaving behind me. And I'm thinking I'd rather go back than go forward. And in my opinion, when she looked back, I think her feet was turning. She was probably saying, I've had enough of this, and I'm going back. If that's the case, then she turned because of unbelief. That is, she did not really believe that Sodom was going to go up in flames, that it would be destroyed. She did not believe that God would do as He threatened. And in her eyes, He would not do it because it wasn't as bad as it had been depicted. It was not as bad as it had been stated by, in a sense, the angels. She held a too high opinion, I think, of what God held a low opinion of. She would not identify, she would not label, she would not call evil what God called evil. Come to tolerate a level of unrighteousness that God would not tolerate. And in a sense, her look back was a judgment on God. That is, God, this city does not deserve destruction. It should be spared. And if anybody needs to change their mind, it needs to be you. And so she, in a sense, said in judgment upon God. And she looked back, she said, in a sense, there is what I want. That's what I long for. That's where my heart is. And I don't care what your invitation is. I don't care what privilege you give me. I don't care about the silver spoon anymore. I don't want that. I want what's back there in Sodom. That's what I want. And that's where I'm going. Because that's what's going to be there when I get there. She's wrong.
But she made a fatal mistake. Changed her mind.
She changed her mind about privilege that God had given her.
And she said, in a sense, yes, I have been called and drawn and wooed and invited and accepted by God, but I don't want Him. I don't want Him. Now, I think God gets hurt. I think God gets riled when somebody does that to Him and implies that what Sodom has to offer is better than what He has to offer. I think God is jealous of His righteousness. He's jealous of His glory. He's jealous of Himself. He's jealous of His wisdom. He's jealous of all these things. And to say, I don't want it. I don't want it. I'd rather have what Sodom's got. God is more than offended. God is angered. And so in Colossians 3:2, we have a verse. She was playing with fire when she was playing with her privilege. When you start playing around with your silver spoon, you're really playing with something that's dangerous. Colossians 3:2. Bible says, set your affections on things above. Set your affection. Her affection had been set on things in Sodom. Some good, some bad. Some evil, some bad. Some not so evil. But she has set her affections there. Not on things on the earth. There are hundreds of things that pop into my mind, I guess your mind, during a day. Things that we can desire. Things that we can pursue. Some are placed there by our flesh. That's Sodom. Some are placed there by the devil. That would be Sodom. And some are placed there by the world, and that would be Sodom. Those we can identify as being like that, we know, are contrary to the will of God. We are walking away from them. We're not to look upon them. For it seems that if you look upon that which is forbidden, there is the curiosity to go back to it. That seems to be the power of the thing that you and I look at that's forbidden. If you look at it twice, here it was, don't even look at it once. But if you by accident look upon something that is forbidden, you don't look back at it again. You turn and go on. Because to look back is to give it the opportunity, like a magnet, to draw your attention, to draw your thoughts, to stir up your emotions, stir up your desires. To look back is to entice yourself to be drawn back. There is a power in the look. And God says you don't want to look back. I don't want you to look. You're leaving behind what is bad. Going towards that which is good. There's no reason to look back. There's nothing back there for you. There's nothing back there that's going to be lasting. Nothing back there that can bless you. Just keep looking forward. Nothing had changed in Sodom since Lot's wife had left to make it safe for her return. Nothing was different. Sodom is never safe. Now, that's one of the great fallacies, I think, that the world has presented to us. Is evil is safe. It's not. Sodom is not safe. When we got into Tampa, we had to fly to Tampa because I have so much trouble finding my way down freeways and off freeways and on freeways. I end up where I don't want to end up. I decide, well, Barry gave me a little map here on the computer, so I said, this is a back street. Ooh, that's a mistake. this is a back street, but it goes straight to the hotel. So I say, it doesn't look very long on the map. You can just count the blocks. It's not very far. And it looks all right. Of course, the freeway was over here a little bit, but that was about a 6-lane freeway. You know, and they go zip, 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 zip. I don't know where to go on a freeway. So I just go to the back street and drive as slow as I can. And sort out, the street was real nice, wide, you know, and narrowed down and narrowed down. And then all of a sudden, it got dark. Man, roll up the windows and get out the guns. You know, this is awful. I was in Sodom. I tell you, and it went on the streets did. And you stop at a stop sign, you stop it. Like the street was deserted besides these people in the bars and walking in the streets. And I said, oh, man, will I ever get it? And I ended up getting lost in the worst neighborhood yet, you know. And I'm saying there's nothing in Sodom that's safe. And I passed by one of these nightclubs, and they were all out in the street. You had to go around them with a car. And I was scared. There's nothing safe in Sodom. And for me to get the idea to park my car and jump out and run in, no way would I have done anything. But there were a lot of folks in there having a good time. I guess they think they're having a good time. And so there's nothing good in Sodom. Don't go back to Sodom. There's nothing good there. And yet that's what Lot's wife decided she wanted to do. You and I need to renounce forever the idea, I'm going to go back on God. But that's the thought you want to get rid of. I want to just say, I don't want the silver spoon. I don't want you, God. I don't want your lifestyle. I don't want to be associated. I want to be associated with that thing back then. You don't want to say it to God. He is sensitive. You don't know your privilege. Don't throw the privilege in the garbage can. Because you see, Lot's wife said, I don't want to go forward with you. I want to stay with the people in Sodom. And he gave her a wish to her. All right, you can stay with her. And she turned to a pillar of salt. She was destroyed just as the city was.
God is sensitive to His, or to our reaction towards His invitation to walk with Him. There's nothing in Sodom to look back to. She stepped on dangerous ground, and she stepped on shaky ground. And by her actions, she said, I'd be better off if I was back in Sodom than I would be if I was with you. Don't ever say that to God. That's very dangerous ground to get on. She said, the people in Sodom had the silver spoon in their mouth. That wasn't true. That wasn't true. And that was an insult to God's provision of her for 30 years. I want to close with Luke 9:10. Luke 9:10. Remember Lot's wife. Don't do what she did. Don't turn your back on God once you walk with Him. There's nothing in Sodom to repay you. Luke 9:62. No man, says Jesus, who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God. And I think we have the same implication here we have with the story of the wife of Lot. Father, again this night, we are grateful for the privilege that we have received from you as to being called and drawn and invited to be part of your family. And we look forward. May we find no reason whatsoever to look back and think that Sodom has more to offer than what you do. May we bring always thanksgiving and praise to you for your stopping and taking time to draw us, call us, and to make us a part of your family. We pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.